The Initial Reaction Podcast has its baseball cap ready, its tailgating equipment. We are ready for the 2017 Milwaukee Brewers baseball season getting underway Monday. I'm sure glorious weather will be following us here. I'm J.R. Radcliffe of Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers, special guest star on the podcast. Introduce yourself, sir. Yes.
I'm Andrew Grumman.
Yeah, so I'll be interviewing you while you introduce you. Grumman is also with Lake Country and Now Publications. You have heard him before on this podcast. You know a thing or two about the Brewers, right?
So to speak.
You covered them full-time, for example, Fox, and of course have done various freelance activities involving the Brewers. We're going to talk about that and as well put a bow on the basketball season. Steve Showalter of, you know him from a number of areas, Menominee Falls boys basketball coach. He was the Germantown boys basketball coach when they won three straight state titles. And his son, Zach Showalter, hit what quickly became one of the most familiar shots in Badgers history. So talk to him about that, about being at Madison Square Garden, watching his son's legacy get cemented pretty much, and about some of the success he had as a coach moving from Lindenwood to Menominee Falls or to Catholic Memorial in Menominee Falls and kind of what caused that, sort of those dominoes to fall, and also a little bit about his finish to the season, which involved, sort of a timing issue, somewhat coincidental, because I had talked to him earlier this year about, another timing issue in 2011 where his team got beat by Appleton East, which hit a shot after the clock should have started and then subsequently stopped, so that there was a little bit of, I don't know what you call that, poetry there as well. So we've got the Showalter interview, but let's start with Brewers, Grumman. Opening day 2017 is upon us. I'm not excited at all.
Yeah.
Are you excited a little bit?
Yeah. And why I think the segment of the Brewers fan base that is excited is because we're still in this process of rebuilding.
Oh, yes.
But
we
now,
only have a few blocks down.
Now truly. You're starting to tilt the other way a little bit, where
maybe
in the matter of younger players are starting to get here,
sure,
and this might be the year where more of them get here. There's a few that are here already, Orlando Arcia, to name probably the biggest one, and maybe down the road this year you'll start to see more of the guys you've heard about,
right,
as the faces of this rebuild get here. And this is a team that, it's fun to root for young players with talent that are taking their growing pains, mm-hmm, rather than a bunch of guys that don't belong that are just filling spots.
Yeah.
And I think that's just starting to tilt that way to where we're going to start to see younger players begin. But that also is going to come with, I think, more losses potentially than people are prepared for.
Yeah.
Last year, the Brewers really exceeded expectations to the fact where they outperformed the talent they had on that roster. And now people expect the next step, where oftentimes you have that one year where you exceed and then you come back to earth. The Bucks did it.
Yeah, where, for sure.
Where then they start to rely on youth, and those young players have to take their lumps and their growing pains, and maybe they go backwards.
Right.
The Bucks were a perfect example. They made the playoffs unexpectedly that one year. Then the next year, they lose veteran guys like Jared Dudley and Zaza.
Yeah, and it was a train wreck.
And they go back, and now they're starting to come forward with the younger group again. So I think the Brewers might be in for that step back from last year, but it's going to be done with progress in mind, with maybe younger guys in the lineup every day by the end of the year.
I think a rebuild is a little bit easier to look forward to when you have that one prospect who's focal point. I felt that way with Prince Fielder to a degree. I mean, I wouldn't say they even had the one prospect, but Prince Fielder was sort of the face of what was to come for a while. Then Ryan Braun entered the picture.
At the time was,
yeah, I mean, Ricky Weeks was the number two pick. So you can't discount him. And Ryan Braun was then quickly became, I think for him, that was even after he debuted as a rookie in 07, when he had a great, homered in his first game in San Diego and had just a really fast start, became rookie of the year. I think then he sort of took over the face of that.
And all those guys that came up, even Corey Hart, JJ Hardy, had success right away.
Right.
And got fans.
Yeah, I mean, J.J. Hardy was here for a year where he was really sort of thrown in the fire. That's true. I don't know if he was great necessarily out of the gate, but he was definitely, he managed pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Very similar, I think, to Orlando Arcia, who was given this half season that I think could be a huge boon. But I'll tell you what, having Lewis Brinson on the cover of Baseball America, having him really now become the face of this rebuild. Yeah. And it's a little different because the Brewers did not draft Lewis Brinson. He's only been a part of the organization for half a year at this point, coming over in the Jonathan Lucroy trade. So he's not somebody we've warmed up to over time. But having him on the cover of Baseball America with the headline, "The Prospects That Will Make Milwaukee Famous," is huge. And it does make me more excited because I wasn't looking forward to the season at all. And really, I'm still not. But to know that Brinson is knocking on the door and could be here this year, and he may not be, but he's going to at least push for it. We do have Josh Hader, who's a lot of fun to watch just because he's got the long flowing hair and the glasses. I mean, he's got the Hanson brothers look.
Yeah.
Love to see him. And they don't have a lefty right now outside of Tommy Malone, so they could use some lefty. Yep. At some point, they're going to need a lefty.
Do you know the last lefty starter to start a game for the Brewers?
Oh, that's a really good trivia question. Well, did Brent Suter start in a game last year?
Did he start? Oh, he might have.
Okay.
So before that, it was Tom Gorzolani.
No, it wasn't. Chunk from the Goonies?
2012 or 2013.
Amazing. I was Gonzo for Gorzo. I loved him. But I tell you what, I feel like made a start. He was primarily a bullpen guy when he was here. I think Gorzo made a spot start, too. I don't think he was a regular guy.
It was definitely a spot start.
That's incredible. So who's the last regular lefty?
I mean, Chris Narvison.
Oh, yes, Narvison. I'm like, we're not going back to Capuano here, are we? Yeah. But, Chris Narvison with the 2011 team.
2011, maybe it started at the beginning of 2012.
Yes. Yeah,
before
you're right.
Hurt.
And moved on quickly. And, I mean, Chris Narvison was never a staple necessarily of the rotation. He was he was great for what he was and he fit, but
that one year he was a good fifth starter.
I mean, who's the last great left-handed pitcher that they've had?
It's probably Capuano's all-star year.
CC Sabathia.
Yeah.
So Brewers have never really had a good track record with good lefties. They certainly don't this year. And like I said, as excited as I am to see Brinson and the prospects, I am equally as not excited to see this starting rotation. It's honest to gosh, I feel like we're talking about the Rafael Roque-led Brewers of 2002. And I don't want to disparage. I think Zach Davies has a great future as a quality middle rotation guy. I think they caught lightning in a bottle with Junior Guerra. I'd love to see that continue, but I'm dubious. I feel like there's a injury waiting to happen just because of what he relies on. He's getting up there. And there's no one else on the team I really want to see pitch. I mean, I'm out on Jimmy Nelson. I'm out on Willie Peralta. Yeah. Chase Anderson, I've nothing against the guy, but he is not a guy. He's here because no one else is here yet.
Right. He's a guy that fills in. And you're right. The starting rotation is the part where it's a little bit behind the position players in the rebuild.
Oh, for sure.
But that's the hardest thing to do in a rebuild. That's why most teams aren't successful.
Because the arms just didn't stay healthy.
Look at the Cubs. They were position player heavy. And the last thing they did was do the rotation. But they did it by spending money.
Yes.
They did it by going to get John Lester, Jason Hamill. They got lucky with Jake Arrieta.
Well, they got lucky on several fronts. Jason Hamill, I would say, is lucky.
Right.
And Kyle Hendricks. I mean, he's raised up through the system a little bit, but like they didn't see that coming. You have to get lucky with pitching.
None of their rotation, of a great rotation, were homegrown guys.
Right.
And so that's, I guess you stockpile as much as you can, and then the rotation becomes, okay, the Brewers are probably never going to sign the John Lester type, but they can trade for pitching down the road with excess. They're going to have a ton of outfielders.
Right.
The only way the Brewers are going to get true number one pitchers is they draft one, or they trade for somebody that becomes one.
Right, Arrieta. Arrieta falls into their lap.
So that's why pitching is always the most difficult thing to do in a rebuild.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to, I think that's what's going to be telling to if the Brewers become that consistent contender is if they can figure that
out.
The only guys they really have right now that you can look at and say, okay, they have a chance. Hader, you mentioned, Ortiz that they got in the Lucroy trade.
Yeah.
And Zach Davies is one of the five that you can look at and point to, okay, this guy could be in that rotation down the road. Some of the other guys are a little further behind in the minor leagues.
Right.
They're so far back.
Yeah.
They're young.
Phil Bickford is a possibility, too, after his suspension.
Now, I mean, a kid like Devin Williams is having Tommy John surgery.
Hard to count on him ever. Maybe a bullpen guy down the line.
So, yeah, the rotation is going to be the hardest to figure out. And you're right. They have this year's rotation is a mixed match of average at best. Junior Guerra, we don't know what we're going to see from him.
Yeah.
We don't know if he's going to stay healthy. Davies, again, the one that you can be excited about. Chase Anderson, classic average pitcher on a team like this.
Who has thrown a few great outings, and he had a great finish last year.
Yeah, a guy that's going to be a 4 ERA guy, and he'll throw 180 innings.
Yeah, total value in that. Not to disparage that at all. It's just not what you want on a contending team.
But Nelson and Peralta are two guys that fans are frustrated with because they haven't performed to their level. And they
frustrated.
They may never.
Right.
They're getting their last crack, pretty much, here.
Yeah.
And then Matt Garza is the guy in the mix that may never throw a pitch again for the Brewers now that he's back on the DL. We don't know when he's going to come back, if he's going to come back. So, yeah, we'll see. I think what early in the season, what you should hope for from these starting rotation guys is Guerra keeps his trade value.
Mm-hmm.
Chase Anderson is a guy that could be flipped for a low-level minor prospect at the deadline. And I think the biggest thing you have to hope for is Willy Peralta and Jimmy Nelson show something,
right?
That they can build off of.
Yeah,
and Willy Peralta still has that because the stuff is there.
And he finished well last year. Yeah. There's a chance that rolls over.
And some team is going to take a chance at stuff if he puts together some results.
No doubt, because every team there's like five or six genius pitching coaches out there, and every one of them feels like they can transform a guy like that.
It's never been the stuff,
right?
It's been the desire, the work ethic. And upstairs.
Right.
Can he figure it out? Jimmy Nelson, you can question if the stuff is a big leaguer.
Yeah. Because so. I think mentally wise, I think Jimmy Nelson's fine. He's a big leaguer, for sure. It just hasn't shown up. And Jimmy Nelson, he frustrates me more than the rest of them, but it's a little irrational. I feel like he was held up on a pedestal as being the best of what's around because in a pitching crop.
It's the best of what they had.
Right.
And this organization has not done well drafting and developing pitchers. And it's hard. Not a lot of teams do it well because it's hard to draft and develop pitchers.
Yeah.
But Yovani Gallardo is really what they've drafted and developed. And even when they were good in 2008, 2011, those years, Gallardo was really the only homegrown guy in that mix.
They had to trade for Carson, they had to
trade for Greinke, they had to trade for CeCe.
Right.
And a lot of contending teams, that's how they do it.
And look at how the Cubs did it. Like, the John Lester deal is ill-advised for certainly the Brewers, definitely. But even the Cubs, when you sign a pitcher for, let's say, 7 or 8 years.
And that'll never happen again now.
No, I know. And at the latter half, you have to hope that the front half of that contract is still effective.
Yes.
Because you know by the latter half he won't be. He'll be hurt or he'll be old or whatever.
I don't think teams are ever going to get, it all takes is one, I guess. Are going to give 6-7 year deals to pitchers anymore.
They're just none of them pan out.
The test will be a guy like Arrieta here coming up. If I was a team, I'd rather give him this is like Cubs money, Dodgers money.
Yeah.
I'd give him average annual value that's higher, but I would say I'm not going over 3 years.
But, right. But what's dismaying is like, okay, so the Yankees, it worked out when they signed Sabathia because they won the World Series. And then, the latter half of the contract was terrible.
They can afford that. Mistakes. The Brewers can't.
And I know that this gets talked about a lot, how the big markets can afford. The Cubs can absorb John Lester's failings if they come about. And the Brewers never could. So in a way, a guy like Junior Guerra is, you hope the lightning in a bottle. Maybe he takes a step forward for all we know and he becomes a Cy Young candidate.
The biggest thing with him is how will the arm hold up throwing a splitter over and over.
And it's even if he doesn't get all out hurt, you'd like to think, or not like to think, but there could be wear and tear that would impact his performance.
I was surprised he made it through the winter on the roster. I thought they would sell high. I don't know if that's because there was nothing there.
Yeah.
Or they felt
we have to have some pitcher. Right. We have to have somebody. Zach Davies, love him. He cannot be your opening day guy.
This team you can get excited about. I think if you're a fan looking for the long term, Orlando Arcia's first full season in the big leagues.
Definitely.
Jonathan Villar.
Moving to second base. Interesting, right?
For a follow up to cement himself as part of this future. Keon Broxton, first full season.
My guy.
Can he do it? And I think he can.
Yeah.
But it's going to be exciting to watch him. Then there's some
Keon Broxton is going to be an all-star this year. He will be an all-star center fielder. Wow. I believe that with all my heart.
Then there's some other minor interesting things to watch, like Domingo Santana. Is he ever going to stay healthy and put it together?
It's a disappointing year.
Because there's so many guys pushing on that door in the outfield.
For sure.
You mentioned Ryan Cordell. There's another guy that's ready.
Oh, I love that trade that they made. I love it. All those people wanted Joey Gallo. It's too early to call this, but I hope all those people can stick it. The people who were like, oh, they should have gotten Joey Gallo. You have no idea what the Brewers got.
And then, let's see. I mean, Eric Thames, what can he do? I mean, is he going to prove himself? They got another guy on the roster, and Hizus Aguiar, who's going to get a chance if Thames doesn't.
Yes. Sad that, by the way, they cut to Jesus.
There's some interesting little storylines, interesting things to watch, where, okay, they're not going to obviously threaten to make the playoffs, but there are some things to watch each night and see and figure out. And I think that is more exciting to me than the team maybe that'll go 80 and 82 and Kyle Loesch and Matt Garza are your top two. But, you know, stuff like that. I think there's things you can watch and see. And as the season moves on, maybe more of these young guys, Brinson will come up. Maybe we see Hader. Maybe we see Cordell.
Right.
Ortiz. You start, and then you get to that July time where we'll see if David Stearns can work his magic again. Because I think it's hard to argue with the Lucor trade that he made right now, just the pieces he's got. And then going back to what Doug Belvin started with all this, with the Carlos Gomez trade. And
yes.
You know, we're forgetting Brett Phillips, who
had
a struggle last year as a young guy at AA.
Yeah, so young for that level.
He's still highly regarded. So I think...
And Hader is part of that deal. And Adrian Hauser, who we'd be talking about if he didn't get hurt.
He'd be in the big leagues.
And Domingo Santana.
And Santana. So there's things to watch. And I think if you're really... big Brewer fan, the minor leagues will be fun to watch this year, too. I know you can't just jet to Colorado Springs or Biloxi, but it'll be fun to follow.
Flashback to 2002 for me when they had nothing going and I was following Prince's box scores every night.
I'm more excited to watch this year's team than I was going into, like, 2013 or 14, where maybe they had a chance to contend, but you really knew they...
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And Doug Melvin, I love you. And no matter what anyone says, Doug Melvin put this thing in motion again, which I appreciate.
And I think he would have started it earlier if it would have been up to him.
Yep. Oh yeah. I will always love that man. And I think part of my frustration with it is I feel very weathered in that I was used to losing baseball for a long time, and I'm in my mid-30s, and I went through that period in 02 where all that mattered was the minor leaguers, and then they got here, and I got 08, and I got 2011, and even 2012 to a degree when they were competitive and fizzled. And
injuries really killed them in 2012.
And 13, I mean, they were still okay enough that I could dream about making the playoffs. And now we're in, like, the third year in a row where I know they're not going to make the playoffs. And here's a theory I have as it relates to Ryan Braun. I think they're going to look at this team. Because Ryan Braun, I think, will still be good next year at minimum. And certainly after that, to a degree. But, like, for sure, he'll still be good in 17 and 18. They're going to look at the 17 team and see, okay, do we feel like we can take that next step in 2018? I've always said, when this all began, 2018 is not unrealistic to have a above 500 competing for a playoff
especially
spot team.
Especially with the wild card, like you said.
85 wins gets it done.
Is a wild card contender.
Yeah. So I've always said from the very beginning, 2018 is not unrealistic. I think everybody's tendency is to set.
I think David Stearns even admitted that they might be a little bit further ahead.
Yeah.
Than they thought.
And I think just to set expectations, you as a fan, you want to say, okay, 5 years from now, like you want it to be as lofty as possible. But I always thought 3 years was going to be enough. To at least get to that point. If they halfway through the season look at Ryan Braun, they say, you know what, I don't think we're going to do this in 2018. Let's trade Ryan Braun. Because I still think if they feel 2018 is going to be okay, Ryan Braun can be a part of that and can be a central part of that. So that's why I think the jury is out on whether they end up trading him. It certainly makes some sense to trade him.
Yeah, but the problem with that is you're never going to get value because of who he is.
He's
never going to overcome his past.
To a degree, though, I mean, do you really feel like because he was explosive last year, we're still talking about it, but what if he's explosive this year?
I think the biggest concern with him is health.
Because he could break down any one of the quote-unquote steroids or whatever to overcome that.
Yeah, and the thumb thing, will it come back?
Cryogenically frozen thumb,
His back, every year he has back problems.
That's true. They sit him strategically to sort of get through that.
I think the council did a very good job with that last year. And he has a lot of money owed to him.
That's true.
Now, when he was on the field
relatively speaking to other contracts.
When he was on the field last year, he was outstanding. I mean, he's great. He's Ryan Braun. He hits when he's healthy.
And I feel like in the modern age where you guys aren't taking anything that could get them in trouble, you can't play every game.
Right.
Guys,
and
even superstars cannot play every game.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, when you talk back to about not just him, but everyone, what the biggest benefit of taking things was, is you were at 100% and you were able to recover right. know, and not get hurt. And that's a huge deal.
Yep.
You know, and but yeah, no, just him, he's getting up in age. You're not going to get the value of what you take say, Keon Broxton at age 27 would put the numbers up Ryan Braun did.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get the same for this Braun that you would for somebody else not named Ryan Braun putting up the same numbers.
Right, right.
You know, the Yasiel Puig stuff, and that, I mean, you're going to have to take somebody like that or, you know, another.
Pretty amazing that Yasiel Puig is not a Milwaukee Brewer. It looked like that was going to happen this offseason.
That would have been another intriguing story.
It would have been. In the meantime, they can continue to distract us with new food offerings. Yeah. You got to sample some of that a few days ago. It does look pretty good.
And they did the remodel's nice. They did well.
Yeah. I love the third base ward.
Eat and drink down there. Yeah, they stuck with the Milwaukee theme.
I love that. Love that. Love the embrace of the community.
A lot of local. Yep. A lot of Wisconsin.
Zafiro's.
Everything. Zafiro's, AJ Bombers. Smoke Shack, a new taco brand. And
I love it.
A lot of local beers and custard. That's hard to get more local than that.
Right. No, that's excellent. A really good move by the business team to do what they're doing.
Yeah, hopefully that brings more money into the organization. You know, everything like that.
Yep.
All helps, and the Brewers have done a really good job of that, I think, over the years, you know, keeping Miller Park fresh. This is the 16th season of Miller Park.
I know. It's a lot.
It's hard to believe, and it looks good.
Yep, you're right. I love that park. I hold it up against any park, and I know that, you know, people are going to say the Minnesota Park, there are some outdoor parks that are gorgeous. They are, but still...
Do you want to go to opening day in Minnesota?
Nope. I would still, and that gets a little overplayed, but you're right. April and September in these parks are not a joy, whereas Miller Park will be great all the time. I love the stadium.
Places like Arizona are already
too hot.
Battling about new stadiums.
You're right. Well, Atlanta. Atlanta's stadium was just as old as Miller Park.
And how they've kept it up. How they keep updating and putting money back into it from the organization.
Yep.
Has kept it fresh, and, well, they have to, because let's face it, they're not getting a new ballpark here.
No, forever. That'll never happen again.
You know, so they have to, and they've done it, which is really nice to see.
I took my son to Fridays the other day just for lunch on a Thursday, and it's still, like, you stand next to that thing, it's one of the modern marvels of architecture in the freaking planet. I mean, that is such a massive, voluminous building. It's almost impossible to grasp how amazing
and
that
there,
structure
is. When the roof
is
open, you feel like you're at an outdoor game.
100%.
If you go to
Arizona
at Chase Field, I keep calling it Bakelon Ballpark,
you feel like you got a moon roof open, basically.
There are a lot of seats where you don't know if the roof is open or closed because of the overhangs.
Yeah.
Safeco Field is kind of similar.
Yeah.
So of the retractable roof of those eras, they did really well at Miller Park.
Right.
And sure, it feels like a giant warehouse at sometimes, but now I think fans will see with these new concourses that they rebuild and remodel.
Yep.
You can see the field
a lot better.
Interesting. And from the field, I guess, I didn't see it yet, but they were explaining this the other day, that you can see these concourses and it's like a more of a
interesting
lit up vibe. So we'll see how it plays with the exhibition games here this weekend.
That's right. Yeah, we're recording this Friday, that prior to the start of opening day on Monday. A couple exhibition games to go, and then baseball gets underway. You're more excited than I am. I'm glad. There's some enthusiasm. I look at the corner infields and the rotation, and I'm like, no, I'm good.
You know what? Anytime baseball's played.
Yes, that's true. And I'll get into it eventually. I'm sure I'll get into it. I'm certainly going to watch, and I'm certainly going to be rooting for the Brewers as always. So thanks for joining me, man.
Yeah,
I appreciate it. Now we're going to move to an interview with Steve Showalter. Like I said, the dad of Zach Showalter, who hit the three-pointer that forced overtime in the NCAA tournament against Florida in the Sweet 16. Didn't work out in the end. Heartbreaking loss, but we talked about that. We talked about his time at Menominee Falls this year, kind of a crazy ending to the season. We talked about him, at Germantown and coaching his sons, including Zach, when he was there, and they won three straight state titles. Talked about a lot of stuff. So check out this interview, and we'll say goodbye at the end. My guest is Steve Showalter. You know him as the Menominee Falls boys basketball coach. He had a pretty notable run as Germantown boys basketball coach, won three consecutive state championships, and you may also know him as the father of Zach Showalter, who is a pretty popular fellow after he concluded his career with the Badgers basketball team. Steve, here's my power rankings. I tweeted this out during the Badger game. My power rankings of Zach Showalter moments, and you could tell me if you agree or disagree with these. I got the shot he hits against Florida in the Sweet 16, number one. The charge he draws against Xavier last year, number two. I'm going to go with the steal and score against North Carolina in the Sweet 16 2 years ago, third, his dunk in the state final or state semifinal in 2012. And then we'll say that shot against the dunk against Notre Dame in the Sweet 16 where he kind of showed off his athleticism the most of all. Is that a safe top five or would you go some other direction?
Yeah, I'd say that's a pretty good top five. The dunk against Notre Dame was pretty impressive because he's doing it over a couple of 6'10 guys.
That's true.
The dunk in the state tournament was over Popcorn. It was about 6'6", so that's the only difference.
Got it.
Popcorn is a kid's nickname who he knew for a lot of years before that, so it was kind of a fun thing as well as getting us off to a pretty good start in the state tournament.
Yeah, no doubt. I think we all kind of remember that as sort of his signature moment as a high school player. And then as a college player, he had quite the career. And I don't know if there's any scenario. I mean, when he was getting recruited, I don't really even know exactly how many schools were involved, how many like Division I schools were interested, or how many scholarship offers he had on the table. But, you know, he walks on at Wisconsin. I know he gets a scholarship right away. I'm sure there's – I don't know at what point there's any scenario where you think he's going to play – his team is going to play in four Sweet 16s while he's – you know, while he's – in college, how close was he? Was he ever close to going someplace other than Wisconsin during his recruitment?
Well, he had probably 25 mid-major scholarship offers. Nothing really to speak of as far as you know, anything high major. He had some interest in a few different schools. He was probably leaning towards Drake.
Okay.
But, you know, UWM and Green Bay were pretty heavily involved. And, you know, I had all kinds of notes and papers and stuff written down, pluses and minuses, and let's sit down and talk about all that stuff. And then Bo Ryan calls him, and pretty much all that stuff went thrown out the window as soon as Coach Ryan called. And he didn't want to talk about anything else but being a Badger from then on.
Yeah.
It was it was pretty much all the only thing on his mind from the time Coach Ryan called, and it was his decision all the way.
Yeah. And you, I mean, you obviously, because you played for Bo Ryan at Platteville, correct?
I did, yes, so, for 4 years.
Yes, so you have a longstanding relationship with him. I'm guessing he knew about Zach through that, if not just for the way he played at Germantown. Did you contact Bo? I mean, was there any attempt to reach out to him prior to this process?
You know, it was interesting because Bo didn't really, when he was coaching, he didn't really jump on the Wisconsin kids until he was 100% sure, because I think he had made a few mistakes in some of the years past and offering kids real early when they're in eighth grade or ninth grade and kind of paid for those mistakes a little bit through the years. And so he didn't really recruit, you know, in these last few years. He didn't really recruit these guys until they were a little bit older. And, you know, he knew who Zach was. We went to his camps when we went to father and son camps, and Zach went to his other camps when he was growing up. But he really didn't, there was never really much interest, in recruiting Zach when he was younger until, the summer before his senior year. By that time, the Badgers were starting to recruit Luke Fisher a little bit, and so they started to. So Bo started to watch our AAU team that summer.
Sure.
And when we were out in Las Vegas, Zach had put together a string of. Actually, our whole team put together a string of really nice games, and Zach played really well out in Las Vegas. And Bo pretty much chose him right on the spot and said, "I want that kid to play for me," and the rest was history for him.
I'm trying to remember the circumstances because he had walked on but got a scholarship right away. Was there another player that – I'm trying to remember if he walked away or had gotten hurt or something. I don't remember, but he played as a freshman under scholarship, right?
Zach, there's a kid named Jared Utoff.
Oh, that's right, who transferred to Iowa.
Who transferred to Iowa when Zach had already committed as a walk-on.
Right.
And then Utoff transferred to Iowa, so Zach got his scholarship. For his freshman year. And then the second year they were recruiting Looney pretty heavily from, obviously from Milwaukee. And, Looney would have got that scholarship, but, obviously Looney decided to go to UCLA. And so Zach, was a walk-on his second year in a redshirt, and then he earned that scholarship back his last 3 years.
It's hard to imagine that he was a guy that was sort of at the end of the scholarship line, considering where he ended up in his career. I mean, I'm assuming you were at Madison Square Garden for that game. I know that's a gut-wrenching way to go, but I mean, in the aftermath, I guess, how do you feel about that game? Because you got to watch your son hit an extremely memorable shot, and I'm guessing as the game unfolds and Bronson Koenig is limping around, you're probably confronting the possibility that if this comes down to the wire, Zach is going to play a big role in it. He may be the guy to take that shot. I don't know. I mean, take me through those last few moments.
Well, I watched the game last night again.
Oh, no.
After I got home, and so I kind of got to – it's so much different watching it on TV as when you're there in person, but I actually saw Bronson get hurt. I thought he had torn his hamstring, by the way. He was walking.
Yeah.
But Zach said that he just cramps up really bad, and he's been cramping up really bad for 4 years, and even before that, I remember in high school he had some issues with that.
Sure.
But we were saying, you know, I was sitting with all the parents and sitting with Bronson's parents, and excuse me, we were saying that Bronson can't even walk. I mean, he was to the point in the last 3-4 minutes of regulation where he literally could not walk, but yet he's trying to gut it out there.
Right.
And as you probably recall, Zach was bringing the ball up the floor, which he rarely does. Zach was running the point guard, and along with Nigel and whoever else could get the ball up the court that night.
Yeah.
So you know, I never in my wildest dreams did I think that Zach would end up taking that shot. I think the way I've heard him tell it, now I've listened to a few other radio shows today, and the play was for Zach to come off the screen by Bronson and then throw it back to Bronson. But, you know, obviously everybody in the stadium knew Bronson was going to get the ball. So
yeah.
The play kind of broke down and Zach was stumbling around out there and decided that he looked up at the clock and decided I better get the shot up there just in case, you know, if we have a chance to get the rebound, we might get two shots out of it.
Oh yeah. That's a good point. I didn't think about that.
And so he said he looked up at the clock with 4 seconds left and decided I better let this one fly because Bronson's certainly not able to get open.
Right. Did you see him? Keep going.
No, I guess, and the rest is history as far as that. I mean, we went from total elation and joy and celebration to, you know, I was overcome with emotion just from being happy. I couldn't believe it. Tears coming out of my eyes with joy.
Right.
And then... You know, obviously, the way the game ended up was pretty much of a downer for all of us.
Yeah. Did you see Zach do the belt from your angle? I mean, were you able to see that? I know some people couldn't quite tell that was happening if they were at the game, but obviously,
I did not see that. No, I was as soon as he hit the shot, I looked up at the scoreboard, at the big clock, to see how much time was left,
right.
And obviously, and they reviewed the play because we want to make sure. You know, I was watching to make sure it was a 3 because we wanted to make sure it was tied. And at that point, I just sat down because I was so happy and elated that we were actually going to get the game into overtime, hopefully. And I did not see anything with the belt thing. And I don't know how long you want me to go on here, but
no,
I have always been so proud of the fact that kids that played for me, and especially my boys, they never celebrate until the game's over. They've never celebrated. They don't make gestures. They don't, you know, slap high fives. There's no celebration going on while they're on the court because they're supposed to be thinking about the next play, the next possession, and you can celebrate after the game, right?
Yeah.
And for him to do something like that was totally out of character, and it kind of surprised me, but at the same time, it was so thrilling to see how much joy and how much fun that brought him and the whole program and the state so far.
Yeah. Yeah, I know sometimes celebrations in the heat of the moment like that get criticized, but I don't know. I think everybody in Wisconsin was pretty much loving it.
It's
a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to do that with Aaron Rodgers in attendance.
And I could see that he looked up, you know, as soon as he made it, he looked up at the clock to see how much time was left, and he knew the whistle blew. And there was going to be a timeout taken, so he knew to wait to hold a celebration, I guess.
Yeah. So when I did a story a little while back on the Germantown-Appleton East game from 2011, I talked to you and to Zach, and I talked a little bit with him about playing for, his dad, and you've coached both your sons, and he talked a little bit about just the maturation process, how that became a lot easier as a junior and senior than as a freshman and sophomore. Is that kind of how you recalled it too, that I'm sure every coach gets asked about coaching their sons, but at first it wasn't so easy, and then as time went on, I mean, you know, they were 2 year better players, and it became a little bit easier as they got a little bit older?
You know, both boys were really unique that way, really different. You know, Zach was very stubborn, and he would argue back, and he was pretty bullheaded about what he thought was right and what I thought was right, and we'd kind of meet halfway in the middle, and he was actually a pretty smart basketball player, so there weren't a lot of arguments, but when there were, it was neither one of us was going to back down. And Jake, as a younger son, he wouldn't argue back. He would just ignore me or walk away and do his own thing. And he was a different person, and he thought he knew it all too. And he would just, say, "I'm not listening to you sometimes," which he grew out of that as well. So it was interesting coaching both boys. I love every second of it. And I would love to do it again, but at the same time, you don't get to sit and, you know, during the games, you can't sit and celebrate your kids' accomplishments because you're coaching all the kids, and they're all your guys, they're all your boys. And, so it was a joy, but it was also sometimes you just wanted to sit back and kind of just enjoy watching your kid play. I kind of missed out on that a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think of it from that perspective. And now Zach is like, I mean, people are going to remember him forever. He's a celebrated part of Badgers history. That's got to be surreal. I know it hasn't probably fully kicked in yet because there hasn't been a lot of time to pass, but I mean, people are going to remember his career very fondly, I would think.
Well, you know, we didn't know. I mean, I don't know if he knew. I mean, he had a pretty good mentality going in there, you know. I want to earn a scholarship, whatever I can do to impress Coach Ryan and get a scholarship. And then after that, it was, well, I want to earn a couple minutes just for me to walk out on that floor with that jersey on and actually get meaningful playing time. That was the next box to check.
Right.
And then, you know, after a while it was, well, heck, I'm playing now. I want to earn some more minutes where I'm actually out there, you know, making a contribution. And then it got to the point where I want to start, and then, wow, you know, just things, he just kept checking things off the box or checking the boxes, and I was just so proud of him every step of the way. And at no time did we ever think that, you know, he had it made, or did we ever think it would get to this, because, you know, he's relatively small for the Big Ten and not super quick, not super anything, but, you know, that kid's got a heart of gold, you know, he'll never stop working, never stop trying to win.
Right. He can jump for the people in the Big Ten. You're right, maybe about everything else, but he can jump, as he showed in that Notre Dame game last
year.
Yes,
for sure.
So,
he needed to use that to the best of his ability, because otherwise he wasn't going to get out there for some of those rebounds.
Yeah, no, that's true. So back to the high school game, you coached your first year at Menominee Falls this year, and it's funny because we talked about in our last conversation, talked about the game in 2011 where the shot clock didn't start on time, and then you had your own sort of clock situation in the regional final. You guys upset Kimberly when Cross Wilson hits a dramatic three at the buzzer, another dramatic shot at the buzzer where the ball had been tipped, or so it appeared anyway on the video. I mean, take me through that moment, and if that crossed your mind when the clock didn't start on the tip and Cross Wilson had an extra split second to get that shot off. I don't know if, you know, I haven't timed it out. I don't even know exactly if that would have been a huge impact. I think it would have been, but take me through that moment. I mean, that had to be a crazy thing for you and for that program.
First of all, it was Fond du Lac because...
Oh, Fond du Lac, not Kimberly. Sorry,
yeah,
yes.
That's all right. Well, Kimberly ended up beating us then the next game.
That's
so,
right, yep.
And deservedly so. They're a really good team.
Yeah, yes.
And, you know, Fond du Lac is a really good team. With their point guard is incredible. We couldn't stop him all night. He hits a shot with, you know, whatever, 3.5 seconds left. And we take a timeout, set up a play, and... I had no idea during the whole play, as the play is being run, that the ball was tipped at all. I mean, it wasn't a drastic change as far as the flight of the ball or anything. So later that night, after all the celebration died down, I started to get some texts or some, you know, read some tweets that the ball may have been tipped and there's video and all that stuff. And, you know, I went back and looked at it, but I don't think there's a lot you can do about it at this point. I mean, yeah. It's a lot different. To me, that's a lot different situation than what happened.
Oh, definitely.
But at the
yeah.
same time, it's the same heartbreaking feeling that we went through that night at against Appleton East, and same heartbreaking feeling I just experienced, you know, three nights ago in the Badger game. So
yeah.
I told people today it's a lot better feeling when you're on the good side of those situations than when someone hits a buzzer beater against you.
Yeah, I think Luke Lowe is the name of the Fond du Lac point guard, first team All State.
Yeah, Lowe.
Lowe, yeah, L-O-E-W. Yeah, yeah. I know he did have a great year. I don't know if you expected to get that Falls team to a sectional or near it. I don't know what the expectations were at the beginning of the year, because obviously you guys ended up having a really nice season. You beat Brookfield Central in the last game of the regular season, which is a whale of an accomplishment. Did the season exceed your expectations? I mean, it sure seems like on paper that Falls took a huge step forward.
Well, we had no size. We had Matt Henningsen, who's a 6'5" football player.
Right.
And other than that, we pretty much had all guards and guys that would, if they were on any other team that I've coached in the past, they would have been guards. But we were playing 6'1", 6'2" kids at forward positions just because that's all we had. We decided early on that the one thing that we do have is a lot of depth. And so we can just throw guys in there, and we subbed 5 in and 5 out a lot this season and just try to wear the other team down with our speed and running, and getting fresh legs in there. So, did I think we could win 17 games and get to the sectionals? At the beginning of the year, no. But then as the season wore on, you know, we were in every single game all year long until our last game. I mean, we lost 7 games total during the regular season by a total of 23 points, which is, you know, averages out to about 3 a game.
Yeah.
And we had shots at the buzzer in at least 5 of those games to tie or win, and didn't win any of them until that final game. So it was an interesting year as far as, you know, I've coached teams in the past that, you know, we averaged 80-some points a game and only gave up 40-some points a game. So to be all these close games one after another, it just, you know, it took a lot out of me as a coach.
Yeah.
It's tough to coach those games down the stretch when it's always a one-possession game, and I hadn't been in those situations in quite a few years, so it brought me back to reality a little bit.
Yeah, and even in that Kimberly game, you guys you weren't getting blown out at halftime. I remember that was kind of a closer game than I guess I thought it was going to be. And then, you know, they were able to pull away. They were one of the top teams in the state all year. But, I mean, you guys have to have serious momentum going into next year.
Yeah, we had the Kimberly game. We had a really good first half. I mean, we hit some good shots. Our defense was not good. But in the second half, they, you know, our shots quit falling and they started pounding us inside. You know, with Henningsen in foul trouble, we didn't have a lot of strength inside to go against their 6'8" guys, and we just had no rebounding ability. And, you know, we lose six seniors that contributed a heck of a lot. You know, between the six of them, they started every game all year. We kind of rotated our starting group during the season based on injuries. You know, 6 out of the 10 guys that played are gone, so we're definitely going to have to reload a little bit. But we have some momentum, and we're going to do the best we can, like we always do.
Sure. So the big story in the off season was you leaving Lindenwood as an assistant coach to college to come back to the high school ranks, hired by Catholic Memorial, and then I think it's been kind of well documented. Just sort of it was a better job situation for a lot of reasons at Menominee Falls. So you kind of left that situation after a couple of weeks to go to Falls. I don't know how acrimonious that was. I doubt that it was. It seemed like everybody was sort of on the same page with it. But I guess if you just sort of maybe take me through that a little bit, how tough of a call was that to make and to have to back out with Catholic Memorial?
Well, first of all, I appreciate everything that Catholic Memorial was able to try to do for me, because, you know, they were the first ones to call, and I told them this is kind of what I'm looking for. I'd really like to work in the school, and I'd really like to, you know, put the basketball piece together with working in the school and try to make that a career, as I had been at, you know, I had been a police officer for 25 years, and I was not interested in going back to that. So Catholic Memorial tried to put together the best package they could, and they, admittedly so by them, they, you know, they couldn't give me you know, exactly what I was looking for. And, you know, I after schools around the area started to find out that I was coming back, and then I was back in the coaching, you know, that I was open to coaching, I started to get a lot of calls, not just this one. And so now it's like, holy crap, you know, what do I do now? Cause I'm a man of my word, and I want to be loyal. And, but some of the offers I was getting, and people wanted to talk to me, and I was telling people no, but at the same time thinking, you know, for my family and for me, it might be wise to listen to some of these offers. And I shared that with Catholic Memorial, and I was upfront about everything with them the whole way through. And it just happened to be that, you know, monetarily, and I guess for my future as far as my retirement, to work in the public school was the way I needed to go at this point in my life. And pretty much everybody understood it from everything I can tell.
Yeah, it's, I know, like I said, it was pretty well documented, it seems like, in Catholic Memorial. I got Mike Surrath, who I know is a, you know, an up-and-coming guy. And I think, you know, Ben Farley, he was coach at Menominee Falls before you, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so the moving pieces are going in the right direction. Farley goes to coach football at Brookfield East. They win a state title, so I think you're next, right? Now you've moved into his spot. You've got to win the next one.
Well, Menominee Falls has never been to the state tournament, either boys or girls. So, you know, I to make a promise of winning a state championship would be far on down the road, but that's our goal, of course.
All right. Well, thank you very much for chatting with me. Congratulations to your son for having a great career and a great finish, and congratulations to Menominee Falls, and we'll chat again going, you know, down the line.
Thank you very much, sir. Thanks for calling.
You bet.
All right, Andrew, I said goodbye to you earlier, but tell me what you got coming. Is there anything new and exciting at Now Newspapers that we should be telling the people about, or Lake Country Publications, or anything?
Suburban.
That's right.
Teams are coming out.
That's right. Our All-Suburban girls team comes out Thursday.
Then the boys on the next week.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's I think the two teams are, well, the girls team and the boys team, a lot of talent.
So loaded. Always is.
And young talent and a lot. So, like, some exciting times coming ahead, and then... Yeah, we're getting into the heart of, well, they're trying to get spring sports going.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of indoor track going, and softball kind of sludging along, and soccer just getting started.
That's right.
And
yep.
So, yeah, it's, yeah, the All-Suburban teams, that'll be, I think they're two really good teams, so.
Yeah, I agree with that. Very difficult to choose.
The girls
team will run in Thursday's paper. You can also check out, that's the 7th, right?
6th.
April 6th. And then you can start checking out our content online as soon as April 4th. So check out My Community Now or Lake Country Now. Well, lakecountrynow.com will have the all area team, but we already had that running our papers for the Lake Country area. Then the boys team runs a week after that. My column this past week was sort of a look back with Todd Froworth, mentioned on the last podcast. He passed away at age 54 after a battle with cancer. My column was an archive discussion I had with him, speaking of baseball and basketball, merging the two, about him being an MLB scout. He is with the Baltimore Orioles, was with the Baltimore Orioles, and did a lot of work with them. So talked about that with his MLB draft responsibilities and things of that nature, and you know, how he balanced that with the girls' basketball gigs that he had. So he was an interesting guy. I really, really liked him. He was really good to me. Very tragic news that we lost him a couple weeks ago. And other than that, I think that'll do it. JP Cadoran of Spectrum Sports will be back next week, I'm sure. He'll be talking about how much...
He was also tasting all the food with me at Miller Park.
Oh, yes. We should have gotten his viewpoint on it. He loves him some freebies, let me tell you.
And Iowa basketball, which didn't make the Final Four of the NIT, I noticed. Not good. Yeah. Not good.
They, I think they lost first round of the NIT.
No.
Or they won a game.
They won a game, yeah. But TCU. Beating Georgia Tech, which actually I was cheering for Tech the whole way. That was a very fun. I realize no one will remember who played in the NIT. Valparaiso, my alma mater, played in last year's final, so I'm going to pay a little more attention for the next few years.
Hey, when your program, I went to Arizona State, so making the NIT
is a big deal.
So when you're Wisconsin fans, they make the tournament every year in this last run.
Yes.
It's great, but when you have programs of that don't, NIT is a... not laughable to some.
Love college basketball. I'm going to miss it. We only have one game left. Very disappointed. So thanks again for listening to the Initial Reaction Podcast. We'll check you out next week. Say goodbye to the people, Andrew.
Goodbye.